part two of this episode, we take a look at how an NPO called Project Flamingo bridges gaps in our public healthcare system for breast cancer patients. And we also look at the work that the NPO Reach for Recovery is doing in support of breast cancer patients in our region post-surgery. And with me from Project Flamingo, a general surgery registrar at Livingston Hospital here in Gqeberha, it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you Dr. Michael Brombacher.
Sure. Thanks for having me on today.
Really welcome. Appreciate it. Thank you for taking time out of your weekend to be here. And welcome to volunteer and breast cancer survivor from Reach for Recovery, Roseanne Day. Welcome, Roseanne.
Thank you so much for having me. Thanks.
Okay, Michael. Yeah. I'm going to start with you. How did you come to be involved with Project Flamingo?
So it's a story we've always enjoyed. It was in 2017. I was a student in fifth year at UCT and walking through Grootskier Hospital where Project Flamingo started with Dr. Root. We saw a poster on that campaign going about innovators in the hospital. And we saw Dr. Root and her story about Project Flamingo. And then later on also saw a Facebook post about it and read a news article. And I was there with my now girlfriend and, I mean, girlfriend at the time, and now wife, Amy, and we just thought this is something we want to get involved in. So we messaged Dr. Root and said, as students, what can we do? How can we get involved? So we started at that point the Flamingo Student Initiative, which has now grown into a great thing where there's lists, I mean, students at every list in Cape Town supporting it. And then when we moved here to PE, along with Dr. Ngogo, we set up the Project Flamingo lists at Livingston, and then later on also set up the list in East London when we lived there for a short while. So yeah, it's been a journey since 2017 and something that we've loved being a part of.
And wonderful. Yeah. So rewarding.
Yes, yeah.
In South Africa's public healthcare system, on your website, and I'm quoting here, breast cancer is not just a diagnosis, it's a race against time. And we hear both horror stories and positive stories about the public health care system. You are at the coalface. So tell us, explain to us the steps involved, what you do when somebody who doesn't have private medical health care and receives the shock of a cancer diagnosis and then kind of goes, well, what do I do from here?
Yeah. So I think even to take one step back, for someone who even just finds a lump, what do you do at this point? And that's where our public health care system comes in. You'll either go to a first step, which is a GP, or your primary care practitioner at a clinic. They'll see the lump, they'll diagnose, and that's where they then chat to us as the surgery team at Livingston. And we run every Friday a breast clinic. So, and that we try to keep it as rapid access as possible, that patients will see us within the next week or two, but definitely within at least a month. They'll come to see us, get a consult with one of the surgeons, be seen, booked for their mammography if indicated, or have their biopsy done. At that point, we'll give you a follow-up date, which is also typically about 2-3 weeks, because that's how long it will take for those tests to come back. And at that point, if you are diagnosed with your breast cancer, you then move on to the next stage, which is a CBC, which is Combined Breast Clinic. And that's a specialist discussion that happens with the oncologists, the surgeons, and the radiologists, where you're seen by a full team of between 5 to 7 doctors, and the plastic surgeons will also be there. And at that point, you'll be spoken to, we'll hear your story, we'll review all your results, all your imaging, and at that point you get a treatment plan, which is in conversation with the patient as well. So it'll be a decision on, this is what we advise, what are you comfortable with, what would you like, and from there you'll then get either your surgery booked or you'll be started on your chemo journey if you're going to do chemo first. And so yeah, that's sort of the whole process. And then after your operation, again, you will go back to that same clinic, where again you're seen by a multidisciplinary team of specialists, and decisions are made on what's the next step in your treatment plan.
Yeah, so this is wonderful.
Yes,
yeah, it's wonderful what you. So for example, if somebody came to me and said, "I don't have private medical aid, I have discovered, you know, a lump," they would have to go for. Could they go to the clinic? Could I say to them, "You can go to this clinic on a Friday"?
So we'd prefer that they went either to the GP or the local clinic first assessment,
right,
and a referral,
right,
onwards onto, okay, us. And then they would be able to see
and
us
then
on
they
Friday.
Would, okay.
Yeah. And then they'd come in to see us.
Okay,
yeah.
That is wonderful. And this is something that you are a volunteer.
No, so that would be the Project Flamingo side. So this is the general service we have at Livingston that Dr. Ngogo set up quite a few years ago.
Okay.
That's how we work with the Friday breast clinics, with the CBC meetings.
Yes.
Where Project Flamingo comes in is we, on a Saturday, every 6 weeks, provide an extra theatre slate.
Oh, that is wonderful.
So actually two lists we will do between 8 and 12 patients, depending on the need at that time, in order to decrease your waiting times. So that's essentially taking 12 people who would have to be staggered throughout the next few months' normal surgery lists and being able to bunch it together and provide that earlier treatment. And so that's one of our pillars of what we do, is those catch-up surgery lists. And those are completely on a volunteer basis.
That's wonderful.
So it's over
and
above what we do.
How many surgeries have you, do you know? Have you got a
tally? So we've done 1,900 since inception, which is 2010. And we're really amping it up. I mean, I think currently we're doing around 300 a year.
That's
across
wonderful.
The Western Cape and Eastern Cape. So it really is a huge project currently. Yeah.
And do all the funds raised by Project Flamingo, what do you use the funds for? Is it for the costs of the theatre? Can you talk us through
that? Yes, so we have multiple kind of arms to what we're doing. And I think we started as surgeries, and we've moved into, with our recent Make Room for Her campaign, actually advocating for the entire treatment journey of our patients within the public healthcare system. So our funds are not just for the consumables and the staff that come in on those days on the Saturday. We're now also looking at upscaling the oncology units, assisting with the machinery and the stuff that they need in order to give the chemo and to support patients and redoing wards, things like that. So our funds do get distributed amongst all of that, but I think, one of our biggest costs is, of course, the staffing for those Saturday lists, because we need nurses, we need porters, you need general assistants to clean. You actually need a huge team to run a theatre on a Saturday. And so that is one of our main costs. But then, as I say, we're also branching out into multiple areas of supporting women throughout that journey, like we say, from picking up your lump to moving forward. Right. And I mean, even in Alice, which is just outside of East London, we've just had our first training session to try and do a district breast clinic. So that's saying that those ladies no longer have to travel all the way into East London to be seen. They can now be seen at Victoria Hospital out in Alice, which just makes it so much more accessible for them.
That is great.
So I think that's Project Flamingo's sort of mission, is to really provide that holistic service throughout the journey with breast cancer.
How big is your team?
So it varies. I'd say in PE we have around 20 to 30 doctors that we can call upon, and so it'll change. I mean, someone will do this month's list, someone else will do the next month, and it all depends also on rostering and if you're free for that weekend and not on call for something else.
So are the doctors like yourself giving of your time for free?
Yeah, so all the doctors are volunteers. Wonderful. The doctors get no remuneration. They are all volunteering for the lists and doing it completely out of sort of their spare time.
Wonderful.
A want to do it, which is great. And it's amazing to see. And I think that's one of the most touching things always, is we've actually had an uptake in the last few years of very junior doctors, our interns in the first year of their career, wanting to come and help out, just sort of saying, how can we help in any way? And for me, that's been amazing to see. Like, I think our healthcare system is in very good hands, that we've got these young 24, 25-year-olds who are saying, we've got a busy, demanding job. It's our first year being a doctor. It's chaos. But I want to also come on a Saturday. And so that's been amazing, that we're seeing that uptake of even the junior guys who want to come and help out.
Wonderful.
Yeah, no, it's great.
Roseanne, can I bring you in here? You tell us, share your cancer journey with us, because you are a proud breast cancer survivor.
So thank you. I was diagnosed at an age of 31 in 2013. Also, just followed after my sister, that's 2 years older than me, was diagnosed a year before me. So while I was going through supporting her with her breast cancer, I was diagnosed with my breast cancer, exactly the same cancer. It was, for me, it was, it was tough because I had to support her. And it was, I was actually shocked, because when I eventually found it, the little lump, I actually lost so much weight, and there's all these little signs that you don't always know about, because at that time I wasn't one to go and have checkups and stuff. And when I was diagnosed, the age of my diagnosis wasn't, people said, you're too young to have cancer. So there was not the normal checkups, go to the doctor and go and check yourself and all of that. So eventually when I found the little lump, it was quite small, but I could notice it because I've lost so much weight. And straight away I was Yeah, I went to my GP. He did the biopsy, and he actually diagnosed me to say that I've got cancer. And from there on, my journey started. I went for a double mastectomy at the age of 31. I was on a journey of chemo. I was on a journey of radiation, Herceptin, and I actually finished a 10-year-long journey last year, February. And in between all of this, it was a very difficult time of my life. I also had my little, I can say it, my little miracle baby.
You have to share that story with us.
Shame. My little miracle baby, she's turning 4 now. So I actually had a little break, if I can say that, of my 10-year plan while I was pregnant with her. And then when she was born, 10th of November 2021, I carried on with another 2 years, and so I finished last year, Feb.
But she's a miracle child because you're not supposed to be able to fall pregnant when you're undergoing that treatment.
No, so yeah, I was actually early. Well, you are being put into menopause if you diagnosed with HER2 positive, because they need to block your hormones, because those are the things that's actually making your cancer grow and stuff. So I was in menopause, and then I changed from eating normal to go and be full-on vegan, because it just helped my system at that time. Your body gets inflamed, you feel sick. So for me, meat and stuff was a no-go. So I turned vegan, and then I just started craving, and that's how I found out I was actually, there's another little human growing inside me. So,
wonderful.
Yes. And then through my journey as well, my dad was also diagnosed with the same type of cancer, but also just he was diagnosed with prostate cancer. So myself, my dad, and my sister, we all three of us went through our cancer journeys at the same time. So,
and yes, you're all survivors.
We're all survivors. We just 21 years ago, now at 30th of September, my granny will be gone for 21 years. She also passed away of cancer.
Okay.
So cancer for me is a very deep emotional part of my life.
Which is why you started on a new journey now. Can you share that story with us?
So, like I tell everybody, my cancer journey started in 2013, but it's an ongoing journey, because I'm now I'm a survivor, but I'm now also a volunteer supporting women. That's why I became part of Reach for Recovery. They were having a Reach for Recovery. Stephanie was actually on Algoa FM in March, asking for volunteers, and that's how I heard about Reach for Recovery. So I went for training in April. They trained the volunteers to become a volunteer, to do emotional and practical support. We also been trained to do fittings, educate on breast health, and also in general, all about breast cancer. And when I went for the 3-day training in April, I was selected as a cheerleader for PE. So I was, it was actually, when I went the first day, I didn't know what I want to take out of this. I wasn't sure if I'm going to be part of the group after the training. Am I still want to be part of the group, or am I just going to not carry on with it? But the day when I walked in there, those are all survivors, all ladies that's gone through challenges, breast cancer treatment, and surviving it. And I just felt you could actually feel the warmth and the care, the support. Even though we all gone through it, we are still in that way that you can support each other as being part of a group.
It's a bond.
Yes.
Yeah.
We are calling ourselves the Shoe Sisters because we are walking together and we are walking with newly diagnosed breast cancer patients. So it was just amazing to be part of such an amazing group, and to know that there is so many ladies in South Africa, in all the regions, that's part of Reach for Recovery and doing such amazing work by supporting breast cancer patients.
Wonderful. Yes. Wonderful. Michael, I think you can attest to the fact that for a woman to be diagnosed with breast cancer, the emotional impact is huge.
For sure. Yeah.
And it's that aftercare, that emotional support that is so vital, isn't it?
I think for sure. And I mean, it's something we've seen with even just by doing the Aflamingo lists and grouping ladies together on a Saturday, by having people who are going through the same thing with you. Our patients have given us feedback that it's changed the way that it feels for them, that to know that there's 10 other women there that day that helped them. And I think that's where Reach Recovery is amazing, that you come in that next week as well, and they know that these are survivors as well, who've been through what they've been through, and kind of, because as a surgeon, we haven't gone through that ourselves. You've seen enough patients with it, but you never have that personal experience of what it really feels like to be in that. So I think that's what's amazing, to know that you're helping them in that next step, and we've been here before, and like you say, shoe sisters, we walk it together with you, yes. Which is fantastic. Mm.
Yeah.
So what are your needs in terms of a relatively new MPO in this region? I mean, Reach for Recovery is national.
Yes.
But
So we, as you know, we supply silicone prosthesis to public patients, which is actually that when women that can't afford to have reconstruction surgery, that can't afford to buy prosthesis to have reconstruction surgery done, we actually supply, Reach for Recovery is the only NPO that's actually giving prosthesis to public patients. And throughout the years, I mean, we see our volunteers, all breast cancer survivors, they see about over 6,500 patients a year that they are supporting. And the prosthesis supplying and stuff is every year it's just getting more and more. And we are a non-profitable organization, and our fundraising and stuff, public donations and stuff, and all of our funds, we are in charge of getting our own funds in and do fundraisings, events and stuff, so that we can buy these prostheses. We also, these prostheses is our DITA project. And DITA actually also stands for As and Same, which says that the prostheses we supply to these ladies actually feels and looks like a breast.
Mm.
So every October, we in partnership with Pick and Pay and the South African Mushroom Farmers.
Mm.
So every October, you will see in Pick and Pay, they sell these little pink punnets of mushrooms. And nationwide, every pink punnet of mushrooms that's being sold, R1 gets donated to the DITA project.
Oh, wonderful.
And that's how we can buy the prostheses. Mm-hmm. But the funds are... We are running out of funds because we are standing in actually for state patients that's supposed to be helped by the public healthcare. And we believe that no woman, doesn't matter who she is, where she's from, must go without having prosthesis. If it's now something that just goes into your bra, or if you can have it done through reconstructive surgery, we believe that every woman needs the same treatment across the board. And it just, when we give them these prostheses, it actually physically just balance them out. I mean, if you are a woman that's just had one breast removed and
with my mom, I had one breast removed and affected her balance.
Exactly. Mm. So
aside from aesthetics, aesthetically,
supplying this to them, it just brings back that way of feeling like a woman,
a whole woman again.
Yes, and you can then reconnect with their families, reconnect with their community. They go back to work because they feel themselves. And lots of women are the main breadwinner of the house. And this actually allows them to be as normal as possible and to go and face the world without having to feel like you are missing something.
Yes.
And that's why these prostheses are a vital part in us carrying on with our ongoing support. And that's where our main fundraisings and donations and stuff goes through for us to purchase these prostheses.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Michael, is breast cancer on the rise, or is it a case of earlier detection is just, but it just seems like,
So, I mean, yeah, I think that definitely a lot of cancers are on the rise. I think, as you say as well, early detection, we're now picking up a lot more of it, which I think is great. There's a lot more awareness around it, a lot more people doing self-exams, people encouraging self-examination, taking away that stigma of it, I think, which is part of it. But yeah, I think a lot of cancers we have seen on the rise. Mm. And as well, as you say, as we look for more of it, we will find more of it. Mm. So I think it's a double, it's both of those things together.
Yeah,
yeah, for sure.
Do you have an interest in keeping up to date with the latest research? Is AI going to play a part in what you do at all?
I think, yeah, it's definitely got its role, AI. I think a lot of doctors get scared it's going to replace them. But I think it never will. There's always that human side to it. But yeah, I think there were some interesting studies where they looked at AI interpreting mammographies and helping out there. So, I mean, there's definitely like a gap that can be filled in terms of if you, like in South Africa, we're short-staffed on doctors. If you can get something like that to assist with reporting, things like that. But I think there always has to be that human element to double-check things, I think, and to be in charge of those sorts of things. And so, yeah, it definitely does have its role, and it's an emerging technology, but it's also something to... It definitely has its flaws still. But yeah, so I think it's definitely it's coming through.
And for Project Flamingo, are there any big plans for the future, or is it just, let's just carry on doing as many as we can? Do you want to increase the number of doctors? I mean, I would imagine the more doctors you have on board.
Yeah, so we're always looking, and that's part of our thing is whenever you have someone new join the departments, it's, hey, are you interested in helping out with this? But I think we're continuing to go forward with our surgeries and all sorts, but we also, like I said, we're branching into other areas. And I think that's a lot of our now being involved with the big walk. One of our projects is the oncology wards, or the chemo rooms, and ensuring that we have the lazy boys for the patients to sit in, to be comfortable, because your chemotherapy session can be a long session, can be a full day almost. And to have somewhere comfortable to sit, and especially like at George Hospital, we're going to be looking at getting them the correct pumps to make sure their chemo is given over that time correctly and all sorts. So I think that's where we initially started with as surgeries, and we've realized there's so many sort of gaps that can be filled and areas to help that we're trying to branch out into that holistic, being involved in your entire journey and making room for ladies within that entire journey and not just jumping in at one point. So I think which is something great.
Because, I mean, the surgery is one thing,
but
it's after that, like you were saying, it's the impact that it has upon the person's whole life. And it doesn't just stop there. There is, as you say, you know, the chemotherapy that has to happen, and then is there a possibility your hair's going to fall out? And there's and as you say, it's a journey that no woman should have to walk alone. And unfortunately, because of our healthcare system, it can be brutal on someone who doesn't have access to private medical care. Yeah. So what you are both doing is, take my hat off to you both. It really is wonderful. Really, thank you so much. Any last words from key takeaways, Michael?
Yeah, I think just thanks for having us. Really appreciate it. And thank you for the initiative that Algo FM is doing here with the big walk. As Rosanna was saying, we rely fully on funding from donations from all sorts. Yeah. So to be an MPO and to know that there's people out there who are passionate about these topics and who want to give of their time to raise funds for us to keep doing what we're doing is amazing. And I mean, that sort of support helps us to continue helping our patients. And every time I see a patient and see them on these lists or afterwards who's gotten that support, and to know there was a whole community out there backing this. Right. It wasn't just one person helping you out today. And I think you can see that with the patients, that they know they're being supported by such a huge community. I mean, it's a country that's come together to make this step happen in their journey. So yeah, I think thank you just to everyone who continues to support us. And
must be so rewarding what you do to be able to play such a big part in somebody's life. It must be so rewarding.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. And even though it's just a small part, like we say, in the journey, it's amazing to just be able to be there for that small piece of it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Roseanne, any last words from your side?
I also want to say thank you. It's a real privilege to be part of this amazing event. So we are very excited. We've got lots of people walking with us and getting them out there. For me, from my side, just as a Reach for Recovery volunteer, we need to be visible. We need to be out there. We rely so much on the community to actually get the word out of there for us, and also to form a partnership and to build a bond with doctors and surgeons like Michael and stuff, that's what keeps us going and supporting us to carry on forward. I've got a very lovely, or my outlook with when it comes to cancer is that I've always looked at it as being flowers, a flower bed. So the cancer patients are the flowers, the doctors, the volunteers, the support group, the family. We are the watering cans. Mm. And every flower grows at its own speed, at its own pace, but we all deserve to get the same treatment all over. So, yes, that's... Thank you so much for allowing us to be part of this.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. Thank you. Yeah. Now, I don't know. Yes, I think you're going to watch a sporting event or?
It's actually my stepson is in a bodybuilding competition.
Ah, so. Okay.
Like his little four-year-old sister saying, I'm going to go watch my brother's muscles.
Brilliant. Yes. And Michael, will you be walking the two English bulldogs?
We will. But first, I'm going to pop to the beach by myself and awesome. Take advantage of the lovely weather and then go see the
dogs. Lovely. Yeah. Yes. Speaking of dogs, yes. I am a dog lover.
For sure.
Did you ever hear about do you know about medical detection dogs in, it's a UK organization.
Yes, I've heard of it, yeah.
And Dr. Claire Guest, she was one of the doctors working at the institution. Her dog, Daisy actually eventually received an award in 2009. Just kept sniffing at her breast. Mm. Just kept clawing and sniffing. And she thought, something's not right. Yeah. She went along. Yes. Yeah. She had the start of breast cancer. Wow. Caught really, really early. Mm. And removed. And it's...
Thanks to Daisy.
And Daisy
is a flower.
Sniffing out the ability to sniff out the dog cancers. There's quite a few well-documented cases of dog saving people's lives.
Maybe you need to get a dog for your...
Get a Livingston dog, yeah.
Get those two bulldogs to work, Michael.
Gotta get them to behave first.
Thank you so much. Just for what you do.
Imagine.
Thank you. And yes. Roseanne, I'm sure that Reach for Recovery is just going to take off.
So much.
And I'm so glad that you... Both of you that you've met, that now awesome. You know one another and you can form a stronger bond. Thank you so much to you both.
Thank you so much to you. Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
Take care.
Appreciate
God bless.
Thanks so much.